Discussing the politics of the new European populism, Pella Neuroth-Taylor on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to the Pella Neuroth-Taylor Show on this Wednesday afternoon, second hour. So we're going to edge away from the Middle East for a while. Israel takes up an awful lot of bandwidth and always has done for decades. But we're going to talk about India, which probably gets much less of the bandwidth and media attention than it deserves. The world's largest country, 1.6 million, billion, just overtaken China, is about to head into its election, general election. 960 million voters, I think it is. That's an awful lot of people. What's going to happen to Narendra Modi, who's long stood positioned as a colossus over the country's politics? He's been controversial for his Hindu nationalism, but the Indian economy has gone gangbusters. So we'll be talking to Gulraiz Sheikh, an Indian analyst, about that in a few minutes' time. And then we've got, moving on, back into the Middle East, but on the theme of multipolar world, which India represents. We're going to talk to former senior UN official and professor of international law, Alfredo Zayas, who's written a lot about, basically, and thought a lot about how we can have a new rules-based order that looks at all countries equally and replace the Western you-do-as-we-say type order. He's also been very critical of Israel's behavior in the Middle East, and he's going to talk to us about the ICJ, South African ICJ approach, and how Israel stands there. The fact is that the West is no longer a rule maker, and the West of the world is a rule taker, is becoming increasingly obvious. The gradually developing outcome of the Ukraine war, where Western-backed Ukraine is losing, is becoming even more obvious. And I just want to say a note about that before we go back to the Middle East and to India. The BBC looks as if almost as if it's preparing the British public for maybe some shift of attitude or shift of policy maybe on Ukraine. It's a front page today, talked about Russian war deaths at 50,000. Now, that seems like a loss, a lot, but of course, I think it's going to turn out to be much less than the Ukrainian final death tolls, which are in the several hundreds of thousands. And various Western and UK media talked about Russian deaths as being in the hundreds of thousands. So the 50,000 figure is, I think, an accurate figure. I've read it in a lot of other sources, but now that relatively low figure is finally reaching the mainstream. So this idea that we can crush Russia by killing all of them has been a media phantasm for years, or for the last 2 years, is not true, because Ukraine has probably died, 10 times as many Ukrainians have died. Then there's this headline also on the BBC that the Russian economy is growing faster than any other major Western economy. You know, God, it must have galled them to have to write that. But of course, sanctions, so that's another way of saying it, Western sanctions haven't worked one bit. So that's that. And then we've got the fact that Ukraine could lose this year, another front page headline on the BBC. So there's no excuse if the biggest of the British media outlets are saying these things. We'll see if everyone else falls into line and we get a new narrative on Ukraine, which will be ultimately more helpful to that country. Of course, I'd like to cite Glenn Deason, who's been on this show, who's a Norwegian commentator, often plowed a lonely furrow in Scandinavia, or at least in Norway, where he's been saying for years, as some of us have, I mean, I'm no independent, I follow other sources, but basically that Russia and the Ukraine could have had a peace in 2022. They started talking on the third day of the invasion. Both Moscow and Kiev confirmed negotiations. They then carried out Istanbul. And he reminds us, does Glenn Deason on his Twitter feed, that Ukrainian Ambassador Chalyi, who participated in the peace negotiations in Istanbul, argues that Putin tried everything to get a peace agreement, and they were very close to a deal before it was postponed by the British running the errands of the Americans. And of course, we've got General Harald Kuyat, who's the former head of the German army and chairman of the NATO military committee, saying what the US and UK wanted was an opportunity to kill the Russian and weaken a strategic rival. Well, they strengthened Russian and killed 500,000 Ukrainians in the process. Anyway, as Deason says, this has been an amazing propaganda campaign appealing to the best in humanity to do the worst. They provoked a war and sabotaged all the paths to peace to fight Russia to the last Ukrainian, and they sold it to the public as supporting and helping Ukraine. Almost every pro-Ukrainian policy since the coup in 2014 has failed to have the support from the majority of Ukrainians and always ended in tragedy for their nation. The only reason we're now allowed to speak about the negotiations, Deason is citing a big article in Foreign Affairs, which is a main neocon American magazine, basically, is that NATO has run out of Ukrainians and the war is lost. The public must therefore be prepared for a settlement after 2 years of claiming that Ukraine is willing, winning, while refusing to even sit down and talk with Russia. Disgusting and shameful, thus Deason. Well, okay, so let's just hope that there is some sobering up on the Ukraine front and that we will see an openness to discussing a genuine peace in that benighted country. Anyway, we're gonna go on to another news analysis with Basil after a very quick break. This is the Pelinero's Taylor Show on the second hour of TNT News Talk. Back up.
Giving you what you want.
I want the facts.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to the back to the Pelinero's Show. We've got Basil Valentine giving us the benefit of the latest up-to-date news and analysis. What's you had something on Ukraine, you said, and China. Tell us about that.
Yes, well, Olaf Scholz, the German Chancellor, is in China and says he has urged Xi Jinping to press Russia to end its, and I quote, senseless war in Ukraine, and that the Chinese president has agreed to back a peace conference in Switzerland. Scholz said after the meeting with Xi in Beijing yesterday that China's word carries weight in Russia. I've therefore asked President Xi to influence Russia so that Putin finally calls off his senseless campaign, withdraws his troops, and ends this terrible war, he said on the X platform. Scholz said Xi has agreed to back a peace conference in Switzerland, which is due to take place in June, but without Russia in attendance. For his part, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky responded also on X. It is extraordinary how a social media platform, rather than the usual diplomatic channels,
I know,
has now become the sort of world's notice board, you know.
I know.
That China could help deliver a just peace for his country by playing an active role in the international conference. The Russians, of course, have said that any peace conference without them is completely meaningless. And Xi, for his part, appears to have dismissed the powwow in Switzerland, saying efforts towards a peaceful resolution should be recognized by both sides and include equal participation by all parties. Nevertheless, promising signs. I mean, the fact that Scholz is backing this peace conference in Switzerland, he seems to think it means the complete withdrawal of all Russian troops. Is it to be a capitulation or nothing by the Russians? Is that what is being demanded when Ukraine is obviously so weak on the battlefield, so much so that Zelensky is bemoaning the lack of his air defences and the lack of air defence equipment? He got very aerated about the fact that Britain and America all rushed to stop the drone attack from Iran to Israel, but aren't interested in lifting a finger to prevent air raids from Russia in Ukraine. That, well, we, you know, we can talk about why that might be for a long time. But let's just say these are some green shoots of hope, Pelle.
Well, yeah, maybe. So, did you say that Xi was interested in that? He green-lighted, or he gave his blessing to this Swiss meeting, but having been skeptical of it. That's
well, it seems he's sort of caught in two minds, really. Scholz says that Xi has agreed to back the conference, but you know, interpreting Chinese leaders and their often rather opaque statements is an art form in itself, as you know. Yeah. Xi, for his part, is saying that he thinks the Russians should be involved in the conference. Now, if it's a red line with Scholz and the Americans and the British, for that matter, that the Russians do not participate in the conference, then I think Xi will say, well, what is the point of it? You know,
it's really incredible how inflexible the West has been, in my view. I mean, you think they must know. I mean, they're not still caught up in their delusions. Or are they surrounded by intelligent flax? You just feed them stuff, you know? But I mean, their starting point, I mean, I think I can have respect for the fact that you have negotiation positions and you talk, say a different thing to your own public, and just all they've made in, it's an enormous fiasco for the West and they're trying to protect themselves. But negotiation position can't be all that far from reality as it is now. And Scholz doesn't seem to have taken in any of the, even though he's wise enough along with the Americans to not even entertain boots on the ground thing, which Macron and even the British have kind of suggested maybe, he still hasn't changed his tone or his starting positions for as long as I can remember. I mean, so
well, this is what he said in Beijing just this week. I believe that this progress that is towards advancing the diplomatic efforts is necessary because in addition to the military support for Ukraine from Germany and its allies, it's worth remembering that Germany is the second biggest backer of Ukraine militarily. There is also a need for dialogue between the two countries, he said. Well, nobody was saying that even a few short weeks ago.
Right. Well, maybe, I mean, I've said, and maybe the headlines in the way, if Foreign Affairs, which is really a neocon, sort of pro-Iraq war type publication, if even they're very prominently talking about, you know, the we could have had peace type of thing that you only heard in the alternative media up to quite recently, that's a good sign. It's funny, those of us who followed these blogs on Ukraine, we've been proven, they were proven right, and the big guns have proven completely wrong. Anyway, that's not surprising. And there was something, there was another meeting, wasn't there, between Cameron and Baerbock and in Tel Aviv in Jerusalem, wasn't there, with Netanyahu, European diplomats out in force there. Does that lead to anything?
Well, they're trying to tame the rabid dog and prevent World War III, basically. But as Jonathan Cook and a number of others have argued, it's a bit late to ask for restraint from Israel, isn't it? And they only seem interested in restraint with respect to Iran, not to Gaza, where it's worth remembering, although we don't see it every day, the slaughter continues. 11 children killed in a playground yesterday, directly targeted. Absolutely abysmal atrocity. And the Al-Shifa Hospital is one of the worst scenes I've ever seen in my lifetime, frankly, with patients bulldozed into mass graves, some of them still with the cannula and drip feeds inserted in their arms. You know, the Al-Shifa business is absolutely repulsive beyond belief. Yes, Cameron and Baerbock have been in Tel Aviv. They've been told by Netanyahu that Israel is going to basically do its own thing and couldn't really care less. We will make our own decisions and the state of Israel will do everything necessary to defend itself, according to Reuters, quoting Netanyahu, who said of Baerbock and Cameron, they have all sorts of suggestions and advice. I appreciate that, but I want to make it clear, we will make our own decisions. He also denied that there's any starvation in Gaza.
So, right. Okay, thanks, Basil. We kind of got to wind up there. And it's interesting that Cameron, this washed-up politician, Lord Chipping Norton or whatever, is fresh from his fiasco in America when he tried to get the Americans to G up. Although that might be happening, I don't know. But he was snubbed by Jake Sullivan and snubbed by Mike Johnson. He now finds himself not being treated with a huge amount of respect among the Israeli government.
Just very quickly on that, Rishi Sunak, of course, provided support from RAF fighters, talking about our brave pilots. Had absolutely no business intervening in it. And apparently Netanyahu was too busy to talk to him afterwards.
Right. So there you go, Rishi Sunak. Your RAF movement, good domestic headlines, but it fell flat in the end. You didn't get the gratitude you felt you deserved. Anyway, there you go. We'll have more news and views on Israel and the Middle East tomorrow, no doubt, God willing. Thank you very much, Basil. Talk to you tomorrow. This is the Pelle Neroth Taylor Show. We're going into our first guest of the second hour. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
TNT's Kate Shimarani.
And I got this one thing and I thought, oh, it's because I'm a woman. No, there was a bloke came behind me with one thing and they went, please, go ahead of us. And I said, fellas, this is fabulous. I just don't see people do this anymore. And they weren't British. I said, where are you from? And one of them said, we're from Albania. He said, we're not criminals. We're just people, we work. But people say such bad things about us. Please, we're not bad. And I said, well, listen, I don't look at you and think you're a criminal because your accent. I said, do I look like a criminal? They went, no. I went, well, I am convicted. And I said, by most of the criminals in their uniforms working for the government, the tyrannical government.
Kate Shimarani on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Mom was always very self-sufficient, but we started noticing things were off.
Alzheimer's. It was hard to hear that.
Early detection gave us time to seek information and support.
If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together.
You're not going to get it all right. Just make sure you nail the big stuff. Like making sure your kids are in the right seat for their age and size. Get it right at nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Today's News Talk Radio.
Come on, let the man talk.
We never censor our hosts.
Good. Now, talk.
Uncensored news.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Pelle Neroth Show. So we've got our third guest, Gulriz Sheikh, who's a geopolitical analyst, author and columnist, spokesman for the BJP in India, in Madhya Pradesh. We're going to talk a little bit about, we're going to have a series of Indian commentators, I hope, on in these coming weeks as the world's largest democracy goes to elections. On the back of a booming economy, I just saw that CNN reported that the Indian stock exchange is now larger than the one in London. It's number four. The Indian economy has grown by something like 80%. That's bigger than even China in the last 10 years, whereas the European economies have grown between 0 and 10%. We're way behind. Of course, India's still very poor on a GDP per capita basis, but it's certainly done gangbusters as far as a global power in the world. And there's been lots of investments. He's been courted by Apple and Elon Musk, and massive infrastructure projects are taking place, ports and railways and highways, and all that. And we hope to talk to various other aspects, but I thought today we'd focus a little bit on foreign policy and India's stance on the hottest topics of the day, which is Ukraine and Israel and the Middle East. Now, Gulriz, it's India. India has been poised between the West and the Eastern blocs, if you like, and playing that game very successfully. Good and strong ties since way back with Russia, and of course, you have this, you know, Commonwealth ties or Imperial Raj ties with the British, and you're part of Western culture in many ways. So you've been neutral there, but Modi has been quite pro-Israel, hasn't he? Is that still the case, even after this killings in Gaza?
If you want to see the extent of India, you should see the voting in United Nations. We have always voted for a two-state solution, and we still stand for that. We are also sending aid to Palestine, and we will keep it sending. As far as a very good relationship with Israel is concerned, definitely we and PM is having good relationship with Israel. But the Western media does not show one thing, that he has also been granted the Grand Collar of Palestine Award, which is the highest civilian award which can be granted to anybody by the state of Palestine. He has also been awarded by the highest civilian award of Saudi Arabia and Bahrain. So we are having very good relationship with the Gulf Arab states, and we are for humanity.
So what are you saying, that the Western media is misreporting India's stance to kind of boost support for Israel, which is very close to the West? That's what you're saying.
I'm not talking just about Indian stance. I'm talking in general. Let it be the war in Ukraine, where they have portrayed Zelensky as some kind of angel coming down from the seven skies, and Putin as a devil, a Satan, and the same thing they do when it comes to Israel. So they want, it's a propaganda machinery. And propaganda has started failing in many places. I can tell you, brother, that when the Ukraine war started, I was really, really trashed by Westerners on social media, especially on Twitter. But now, when whatever I was saying is coming true, now they are not saying anything, they are just watching us, because I was telling the truth, which they were hiding from their own people. And this happens very often when something is not going in favor of Western bloc. Even the image of India they portray, it is very bad. I know, you keep looking, keep reading the Washington Post, New York Times. More often they are anti-India, anti-Modi. That's the rhetoric they always have. And it is not just now, even during Indira Gandhi, when the US president used to call her bitch, even that time they were poured, they were all the feminism they were talking went away.
Okay. Do you give us example of a couple of the worst lies about India? And well, I've talked a lot about Ukraine, and my views probably a lot like yours, but we like to criticize the mainstream corporate media here. So tell us some of the falsehoods that the Washington Post, the New York Times told about Ukraine and India, or India. I mean, just generally.
I'll start from India. They say India is not democratic anymore. They often try to say that India is not democratic anymore. India is 100% a democratic country, and Narendra Modi is a very democratic leader. We have freedom of speech much more than in any other country. People here in India, starting from the day one, they have started blaming him for all kind of things. They are putting trash upon him in media, but they are allowed to do that. You can't do it in another country. You can have, when it comes to foreign policy, you can have your own stance, but nobody is coming to knock your door. You can't have it in a country like Germany. Germany is almost pressing the throat of freedom of speech. And when it came to Ukraine, if you go by the print media and the electronic media of West, by this time Zelensky should have been in Moscow, and Putin should have been in jail, and Russia should have been into 15 other pieces. All the provinces should have been disappeared from Russia, and Ukraine might have got a big win, and the Western hegemony, the NATO hegemony, would have been in every place. So that kind of rhetoric they were showing all the time, which was definitely bogus, and now those things are coming out.
Yeah, well, I certainly agree, and I think that I was just saying in my monologue that the Western media are now having, you know, hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians having died. They're changing a little bit. So the BBC today talked, Ukraine's going to lose this year. Russia hasn't lost that many soldiers, and the Russian economy is booming. Okay. And those of us who followed the alternative media, and I guess followed your Twitter feed and other places, know this to be true. And I think that it's logical to assume if the mainstream media get one thing wrong, maybe they're disinforming us about other issues like Modi and the Indian election. And I'm certainly aware of that. But as I was saying, that we sometimes make the mistake of disbelieving things we know about But then when they tell lies about India, as you say, we believe it because we don't have different sources. But we'll talk a little bit more about India and the misinformation about India after we go into our regular half hour news break. And so we'll be back very shortly. This is the Pelle Neroth Taylor Show on TNT News Talk, back after the break with more.
All right, let's get this underway for our first order of business.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. President Joe Biden is set to propose a significant increase in tariffs on steel and aluminum imports from China during his upcoming visit to the United Steelworkers headquarters in Pittsburgh. House Republicans, led by Speaker Mike Johnson, face a historically slim majority, with only one vote to spare following several retirements and an expulsion. Following a massive airstrike by Iran on Israel, Israel's foreign ministry has called for tougher international sanctions against Iran.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Welcome back to the Pelle Neroth Taylor Show on this Wednesday afternoon. As India heads into its elections, a country of 1.6 billion people, we've got Dr. Gulrez Sheikh, who's a geopolitical analyst and who's talking to us about Ukraine and the Western lies. Well, we knew that. But I just wanted to explore a little bit more. Where do the Indian elites or Indian political class, where do they see the Ukraine crisis going and Russia? Do they see India having a role in negotiating a peace, for example? Can India play a constructive role in global diplomacy now?
Starting onwards, we were wanting that some kind of diplomacy should work, but unfortunately it didn't work. And there is a part in constitution, a small point in constitution of Ukraine, that the president of Ukraine cannot talk to Putin till he is in power. So the Western countries have changed that thing in their constitution so that Ukraine cannot even have any kind of constructive talk with Russia or with Putin. So that means either it wins or either it collapses. It is not winning. It is losing hard, and Russia is winning big. But we, as an Indian and a non-violent society, we definitely want that this bloodshed should be over. Millions, half a million people have lost their life, and still count is going on. The Western media have not shown one thing. I have not read this in any of the mainstream media that on 15th of April, Russia has killed about 900 of Ukrainians in Chasiv-Yar. Who's talking about that? They're hiding all those things.
I didn't know. It's incredible. And that's one of the highest death tolls of a single day, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And they have also blasted six of the HIMARS systems, which were given to them by Americans. And just 15 days back, Zelensky has demanded that for the safety of Ukrainians, he needs 25 more of Patriot system. That means Russia has already destroyed 25 Patriot systems. They are hiding it from everyone. Initially, what they were doing, that, Kinzhal missiles, they are coming, and our Patriots have shot them. Kinzhals, 100% they are detectable to our Patriot missile system, and they are useless. But right now, what the picture we are getting is that even the Germans are asking from Japan that please lend your Patriot systems to Ukraine. Why they are not going directly to United States of America? Because it takes a lot of time in production of these systems, and America cannot produce the bulk they are requiring. They are even not having shells. They were talking about getting artillery shells from the international markets, and they have got till now, I think, around 150,000 shells, which is much, much less than required. So they are losing big. And you ask yourself, you are a European from a NATO country. Pelle, you tell me what will happen of NATO and what all discussions will be there in NATO countries once Russia wins this war, then all those questions will come on the front. What happened to Nord Stream? Why there is recession? Why we were involved in this war? Right now they are saying that, oh, NATO is much stronger than before because Finland and Sweden has joined. My God, you are much weaker because you are going to lose the war.
Mm.
And after losing the war, all the fissures will come out.
Yeah, and so Sweden is like somebody who joins the party after the party's over or something, you know? It's really big, the worst timing in history, in my view. Well, you seem to have a very perceptive... is there a difference between the Hindi language media and the English language media in their writing about Ukraine? Because am I right to say that the English-speaking liberal elite in India, they're quite attuned to the United States and Britain still, and they take on those perspectives? Is there a conflict there between the two media cultures in India?
Just the Hindi media is much more showing the correct picture compared to English media. English media, actually, they outsource their news on international issues from the Western media outlets, let it be Reuters or let it be BBC. So they are saying all the same things which Western media is propagating. But Hindi media, they actually go by other sources. Plus, social media is such a thing. If you start researching on social media, you come to know what's going on and what's true and what's false. Do you know? Well, I think most of your viewers, because I have taken the snapshot for you, for your show only, do you know that on 31st of March, actually Russia sent Ukraine a letter via Ukrainian embassy in Belarus. And there is a Ukrainian embassy working still in Belarus, in which they said other barbaric bombs attacks took the life of journalists. They have named multiple journalists in Russia, and they have also talked about Dugina, Alexander Dugin's daughter, and they have also talked about Crimean Bridge, in which 5 Russians were killed and 42 others were wounded. But what they said after that this is a very big thing. The killing and mutilation of civilians, including children, was accompanied by raids by the terrorist organization known as Russian Voluntarian Corps. And these were the people who were trying to go inside Russia. And before the election, which was going on there in Russia, but Russian army failed it. In this regard, Russian Foreign Ministry has put forward a demand from the Ukrainian authorities under the International Convention for Suppression of Terrorist Bombing and International Convention for Suppression of Financing of Terrorism to immediately arrest and extradite every person implicated in about terrorist acts. And what name they have given? One of the demand is to arrest the head of security service of Ukraine, that is Velesny Melyuk, who cynically admitted on March 25th that Ukraine was behind the bombing of Crimean Bridge. So now these letters they are sending, these are same kind of letters which United States of America was sending to Afghanistan after 9/11. Now what will happen after this, after 2 or 3 or 5 or 6 more letters, they will start anti-terror operations in Ukraine.
Right. So this is a little notice document, basically, that the Russian embassy in Belarus is giving notice, basically, to the Ukrainians that there could be an anti-terrorist operation on the model of the war on Afghanistan, which was done after 9/11, which, of course, was an anti-terror operation because the Afghanistan was thought to harbor bin Laden, who is the alleged mastermind. And the Russians are preparing for something like that. But no one notices it because the Western media is stuck in their narratives. But you noticed it because you have the Hindi media. So we got to wind up there. So basically, we got time for one more statement. Do you think then Russia is going to start an anti-escalate the war against Ukraine? You got one or two sentences to make this point.
Let the ground dry. because still there is some kind of wetness on the soil.
Yeah.
And after that, you will see a big operation against Ukraine. And I think that Chesavia will fall.
A big operation against Ukraine very shortly. That's the Hindu press perspective, and they have very interesting sources. And who's to say they're wrong, because they've been right on a lot of other things in the past 2 years. This is Pelle Neroth Taylor Show. Thank you very much, Gulrez Sheikh. We'll have you on again on more geopolitics from India. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I'm CAL FIRE Battalion Chief Isaac Sanchez. And normally we like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourselves and your family safe during wildfires. But given the historic impacts that the weather has had on our state this year, we would like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourself safe during extreme weather. If you reside in an area susceptible to flooding, please take the necessary steps to prepare to evacuate if advised. Make sure you've identified at least 2 exit routes out of your neighborhood, as one of them may be blocked or flooded. As the weather develops, remember to check in on vulnerable neighbors and family members. They may need additional time to prepare for evacuation. And just like during a wildfire, if you feel unsafe, please evacuate. You don't have to wait for the order to come. Keep an emergency go bag ready in case you need to evacuate. And always remember to plan for the safety of your pets as well. If you must leave, never drive around roadblocks. It can take as little as 12 inches of water to sweep your vehicle away. And always remember the mantra, turn around, don't drown. Be aware of first responders working in highly impacted areas, especially on the roads. For additional safety tips and updates on CAL FIRE activities, follow us on social media or visit fire.ca.gov.
I was such a young age. Everything changed. My name is Chloe. When I was 13, my dad was diagnosed with cancer. When I found out, I just didn't know how to react. I felt like everything was just kind of closing in on me. It just became a routine, dad's doing chemo. I'd come home from school, wait for mum to finish work, and we'd go straight to the hospital, spend a few hours there, just draw. It was hard to navigate going to school, hundreds of kids, and I was the only one with a dying dad. He was diagnosed in March, and then he died in October. Towards the end, I heard about canteen. It kind of felt nice to know that they had other people like me. They understood what I was going through, and we didn't even have to chat about cancer. In 2020, I became a youth ambassador, so I can help others the way they helped me. I've done so many things since I was 13. I've graduated high school, university, gotten my license, made a move across the country. Life now is just a whole lot more fun. Please give a gift today to support more young people like me experiencing cancer.
I'm Belinda, and this is Willard, and we were adopted in 2021. When we first met Todd, he was singing a song, and I was like, wow, look at this kid with the biggest smile, and he has a big heart to match.
The energy you give Todd, you get it back from Todd.
Yeah.
Todd's a joy.
Yes,
Todd
is.
Really is a great joy.
I love him. You and you.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Right now, the forgotten poor are waiting for healing and care, for life-saving medical care, for a chance to live with dignity and hope. They are waiting for Mercy Ships and you. Mercy Ships is the largest floating civilian hospital in the world, with volunteer medical staff and crew who donate their time to save lives. And now, as our newest state-of-the-art hospital ship sets sail, Mercy Ships will double our ability to reach children and adults who need us now.
Without the work of Mercy Ships, these patients don't have another option.
Mercy Ships is answering the call to serve suffering people who have nowhere else to turn. Together, we are going to some of the world's most desperate places and bringing a wave of hope and healing to those who need it most. To learn more about this wave of hope, go to mercyships.org today.
Swedish-British journalist, filmmaker, political writer, and author of 5 books, Pelle Neroth Taylor, on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to the Pelle Neroth Taylor Show, and this is the last interview on this Wednesday afternoon. So we've talked a lot about Israel and Iran today. The world is still on tenterhooks. It's a sort of soft version of the Cuba crisis, I'd say. Is Israel going to strike back at Iran after the weekend's attack on Israel that led to no very few casualties, but still a big humiliation for Israel, perhaps? And will Iran counter-escalate, and will we see maybe a third world war or something? Meanwhile, I would say opinion around the world is piling up against Israel and its attack on Gaza. And there's a growing case of growing disquiet at the UN at the way this whole thing has been handled. And with us to talk about that is none other than Alfred Desires, who's a professor of international law at the Geneva School of Diplomacy, former UN independent expert on international order, former secretary of the UN Human Rights Committee, author of no less than 12 books, including Human Rights Trilogy. He's also author of the 25 Principles of International Order, which was submitted to the HR Council in March 2018. He's an American lawyer, but currently a Swiss citizen. Welcome to the show, Alfred Desires.
Thank you for inviting me.
I was reading your... tell us a little bit about that, because we talked a little bit about the South Africa's ICJ case against Israel, and then that kind of disappeared off the news cycle. So can you give us an update on that, and can you tell us what the sort of technical case against Israel is that which seems quite strong, and where do you think in terms of realpolitik is actually going to where it's heading? So tell us about the origins.
The precedents already created by the International Court of Justice do not allow the ICJ to backpedal. So this is an open and shut case. Israel will be condemned. The question is when. Are the judges going to drag their feet not to throw the condemnation of genocide right now? And the 80-page legal brief presented by South Africa was really nothing less than brilliant. And all of the elements in the Genocide Convention of 48 are satisfied. Obviously, the jurisdiction, and obviously there is killing. There is an attempt to destroy in whole or in part the Palestinian population in Gaza. But what is important to understand, and of course the judges know that, this war did not start on the 7th of October. I mean, we are having a slow genocide of the Palestinians. You know that in the 1990s, the General Assembly and the International Court of Justice found that ethnic cleansing was a form of genocide. Now, Israel has conducted ethnic cleansing nonstop since 1947-48, beginning with the Nakba, with the expulsion of the Palestinians. And then they conducted wars of aggression in 1956, together with the Brits and the French, when Sinai was taken away from Egypt, you remember that. And then, of course, in 1967, they have ignored Security Council Resolution 242, ordering them to leave. Now, they have been the occupying power since 1967. And an occupying power, by the way, according to the Geneva Conventions, of 1949 and the 1977 additional protocols, an occupying power can only maintain the local order, bearing in mind the local legislation, and not impose its own. Article 49 is very clear. It prohibits the expulsion of the local population, the eviction from their houses, the collective punishment, et cetera, and it prohibits the importation of settlers. So the entire policy of settling the occupied territories with Israeli settlers is illegal from day one. The International Court of Justice said so in the 2004 advisory opinion. Now, there are several cases before the ICJ. There's a request for an advisory opinion on the apartheid policies of Israel. That has been running now for 2.5 years. Then you have the South African case, which is based on Article 9 of the Genocide Convention. Then you have the other countries that have joined South Africa in this case. And then you have the order of provisional measures. Although the order doesn't specifically say ceasefire, immediate ceasefire, the only way that the 6 points of the provisional measures order can be implemented is by a ceasefire. And of course, Israel has totally ignored the order of the 16th of January of this year. There was a second order. South Africa came back and said, they're violating the order, issue another order. They did. Now, what does that mean to you? We have a breakdown in the respect due to the highest judicial instance of the United Nations, which is the highest judicial instance in the world. Now, you have here a rebellion against international law by Israel, but also with the complicity of the United States, of Canada, of the United Kingdom, of France, of Germany, etc. Because of Germany's enormous deliveries of lethal weapons to Israel, weapons that are being used to kill Palestinians to conduct the genocide. Nicaragua presented a case to the International Court of Justice, which was argued, by the way, on the 8th and 9th of April last, on Germany's complicity. Now, obviously, Germany is complicit. Germany's going to lose the case. Interestingly enough, the case was presented by a German lawyer, Dr. Daniel Müller, and by my friend, member of the United Nations International Law Commission, the French member, Alain Pellet, a brilliant professor, extremely well done legal brief. No way you can escape it. On the other hand, this is a political bomb. What does this mean? Who are the bad guys in this story? The West. That's something that's very difficult to swallow psychologically. I mean, it took me as an American, it took me decades to understand, to feel that we are not by definition the good guys. I was indoctrinated into believing that we were the good guys. I mean, we want to believe that. So you have a resistance in accepting that your leaders are actually great offenders against international law, against the ethos of the United Nations Charter. And I see the judges, there are 15 judges in the International Court of Justice, being checkmated. They cannot escape the precedents that they have already adopted. They can only build on those precedents. And that means Germany is guilty of complicity. That means that France, United Kingdom, all countries that have been delivering weapons to Israel are complicit and have to pay reparations. Remember, there's a principle of international law, ubi ius, ibi remedium, where there's law, there must be a remedy, and the remedy will be huge compensations that will have to be paid to the Palestinian people by Germany, by France, by the United Kingdom, by the United States.
Can I just summarize for an audience who just joined us? Basically, there are kind of two cases. One that gets the Israelis for genocide, based on not least what happened in Srebrenica, as I read in your paper, which was the killing, which was a huge cause celebre in the 1990s. I remember it well, you know, 8,000 Serbs, Bosnians were killed by the Serbs, and it eventually led to the invasion of Serbia. Huge story. And We Were the Good Guys supposedly then serves with the bad guys. But this is Israel, West's ally, doing much worse now. You know, five or six-fold higher deaths. They're going to be on the judge's precedent, the ICJ, the highest court in the world. They're going to do Israel for this. And then we in the West are going to be done. So we're going to, for genocide, a case led by Nicaragua, and the other case is led by South Africa, and then the second case by Nicaragua. And these two cases conjoined will kind of link us in the safe, comfortable West into a huge reparations payment to the Palestinians. Is that correct?
That is correct. But right. What is actually happening, and that in conjunction with the war in Ukraine, the West has maneuvered itself into the wrong side of history. Mm-hmm. Because the war in Ukraine was provoked. The war in Ukraine didn't come out of the blue. It was not imperialistic Russia trying to reestablish the glories of the Tsar. I mean, mm-hmm. This was a country that for 30 years told the United States and NATO, stop provoking, stop expanding. You promised you were not going to expand one inch to the east. We find that that poses a significant threat to our national security. This has been written by Jack Matlock, who was the last U.S. ambassador in Moscow. That's written by John Mearsheimer. It's been written even by our great diplomat, George F. Kennan, as early as 1997 in the New York Times. But of course, you have the fanatics. You have the neocons. You have Zbigniew Brzezinski with his great chessboard. Just the idea of exceptionalism. We Americans have a right to do what we're doing. We have a right to be intransigent. We can be Shylock, and we can demand our pound of flesh. Well, that is backfiring, and it's backfiring badly.
Can I just interrupt you there? Because we have to wind up, and we're going to try and summarize what you said today. Basically, I mean, the West is going to be, we're on the back foot and we don't know it yet. We're going to be hit with large reparations payments. The tide of history is against us. We have to realize that these things are coming up. Do you think the Israelis might short circuit all this talk by just simply escalating to World War III, because that would avoid, that we'd create a completely different dynamic? And secondly, we've got 2 minutes left. Are you hopeful if we survive this Cuba-style crisis, we're going to end up with a sort of more just world, a sort of multipolar world where the UN will have an important place as a debating forum? We've got 2 minutes left to make your points.
Well, Professor Jeffrey Sachs has written extensively on this. And both Jeff, whom I know very well, and John Mearsheimer are optimistic that it is possible to have a new world order, which will be multipolar and multilateral. On the other hand, we in the United States, in Canada, in the United Kingdom must accept that we are no longer the imperialist, the colonial powers who can tell everybody what to do and how to do it. We have to take into account that there's something called the global majority. And the global majority is Latin America, is Africa, is Asia, and they're not with us. Mexico is not with us. Brazil is not with us. South Africa is not with us. India is not with us. Of course, China is not with us. Indonesia is not with us. And this is the bulk of humanity. So we have to come down from our high horses and understand that we do not have moral authority over them. It's this narcissism that we suffer, this arrogance that we prove every day, every word that comes out of Rishi Sunak or of Olaf Scholz or of Emmanuel Macron or, of course, of Anthony Blinken and Joe Biden. I mean, they are incapable of exercising a measure of self-criticism. But you are right. the escalation is there. The danger that Israel will take us to World War III is very real. And Jeffrey Sachs has been mentioning again and again and recalling the Cuban missile crisis.
Professor, sorry, we've got to interrupt you there because we've got the next news item and we've got a break. Alfred Desaix is a professor of international law at the Geneva School of Diplomacy and a former UN official, very distinguished person. We're very glad to have you on talking about these dark events of the moment. Thank you very much. This is the Pelle Nero Taylor Show. See you tomorrow.